It's been a tough winter, particularly if you are homeless.
What I didn't understand was how easy it was for anybody to become homeless. Anybody could end up like that.
A tough economy combined with a brutal winter. We're taking a look at the issue of homelessness. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51%, The Women's Perspective. According to the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty, more than 1.7 million Americans were homeless in 2013. Their average monthly income was less than $350, even though almost half of them did paid work during that month. Put those two facts together, then add the fact that it has been a ferociously cold winter in much of the country. That is a recipe for tragedy. This week, we're looking at homelessness. But let's start with one very cold city and what it's doing about its homeless population. They're calling it a mega winter in Minnesota and Wisconsin. The dangerous temperatures and wind chills in Duluth have resulted in overcrowded homeless shelters and an outpouring of community support. In January, Duluth, Minnesota became the first city in the state to establish a homeless bill of rights. Advocates began pushing for the measure after 29 homeless people died in the city in 2013. The measure, passed unanimously by the city council, directs the Duluth Human Rights Commission to study homeless issues and recommend responses to help. Lisa Johnson of affiliate KUMD interviewed the head of the local shelter, which started the petition for the bill, just before the vote. The original petition called not only for more city assistance, but more affordable housing and the decriminalization of homelessness.
We had temperatures, air temperatures in the 20s and 30s below zero for much of the last week. We had wind chill indexes in the 40s and 50s below zero. And that made conditions hard enough for quote-unquote regular folks. It was particularly difficult, if not life-threatening, for folks that had no homes to go to, who were living outdoors or who were on the street when the cold snap hit. Joel Kilgore of the Loaves and Fishes community joins us on the phone to talk about our shelters in an overflow and overcrowded situation. Is there any way of knowing how many people were actually living outdoors, camping outdoors, living on the street when the cold snap hit?
Well, it's really hard to tell. We Duluth has experiencing a huge upsurge in homelessness in the last few years. Over the summer, we estimated that as many as 200 people were sleeping outside. But during the winter, people tend to call in whatever favors they have, family or friends, and couch hop and do what they can to survive. I think there were several dozen people that I'm aware of that were living outside when the cold snap hit. Luckily, all the people that we have contact with, we were able to get inside, either to Chum or to Loaves and Fishes or to Detox.
Well, the street outreach team put out an APB and said, let us know about folks that are living outside so that you could contact them. I think some people, I think you find yourself, and it's horrifying, paraphrasing Ebenezer Scrooge. And you're saying, well, are there no shelters? Why didn't folks go to the shelters that existed when the cold snap hit?
Well, there are lots of reasons. Both Chum and Loaves and Fishes have been over capacity for a long time. We literally have people sleeping on the floor and in our laundry room here at Dorothy Day House. Chum has people sleeping on the floor. So you can understand why people would want to live in a less crowded environment if they're able. Certainly in the summer, it might be nice to camp outside. But also, people experiencing homelessness are a diverse bunch, just like any of us. There are people with mental health issues and chemical dependency that prevent them from living inside. Imagine having anxiety disorder or Asperger's and being told that your only option for housing is to sleep in an overcrowded shelter. It's not possible for some people. There's also not very many shelter options for couples, so couples that want to stay together are often forced to live outside or spend down whatever reserves they have to stay in a motel.
So the street outreach team put out this All Points Bulletin on social media and through the conventional media, asking folks to get in touch with them if they knew or saw somebody who was living outside. What was the response? What did the community do?
Yeah, well, we got a great response. We got tips on some new folks that we haven't encountered before. You know, there's a lot of hidden homeless. I think sometimes people assume that outreach workers are in touch with all of the homeless population in Duluth, but there really are a lot of people out there who are on their own. They might not know what the resources are, don't know where to go for shelter or for food. So those tips have been incredibly helpful and probably saved several lives. We've also gotten a lot of calls on the hotline for people wanting to help, so that was really heartwarming. Community of Duluth here really steps up.
Well, that was the next thing. Suddenly I start to see postings on social media saying the hotline is not the line you use to make donations. That seemed right. Like good news. What was the community doing there?
In terms of donations?
Right.
It was an overwhelming response from the community. Both Loaves and Fishes and Chum were getting donation after donation of warm clothes and other needs. So much so that we actually have, we pretty much have all the winter gear that we need right now. People were incredibly generous.
So now the weather is moderating a little bit. We're looking at temperatures in the upper 20s. What is that going to mean now? What happens now?
Well, homelessness is with us all year long. It's important to remember that. I mean, I think it's on people's minds when it's extremely cold, but there are always people living on the street, so our outreach team is going to be continuing to connect with them. We have a lot of, as I said before, we're doing pretty well on the outdoor gear, but we've been housing a lot more people here at Loaves and Fishes. We want to, even though it's 20 above, we don't want people sleeping outside unless it's not safe weather, even at this temperature, to do that. So we have there's more of a strain on our household resources. And right now what we're asking for is it's help to just keep the household functioning. We need food and basic supplies to keep the house going. Cash donations are always welcome.
A homeless bill of rights is going to go before the city council. Is it just a coincidence?
Yes, in some ways. But the process was, the homeless bill of rights was something that came out of a summit meeting in May of last year of service providers and people experiencing homelessness that were reviewing the county's 10-year plan to end homelessness, how that was working and how we might want to change the plan in light of the increasing numbers of people on the street. So one of the ideas was this homeless bill of rights to decriminalize homelessness, meaning that, you know, it often the community takes a law enforcement approach to homelessness if people are sleeping outside where they're not wanted, especially if they're exhibiting some serious mental health issues. The tendency is to just want to move them along. And this homeless bill of rights would say that, you know, it's not a crime to be homeless. It's not a crime to be out on the street trying to meet your basic needs, and really put the responsibility then on the community as a whole, both law enforcement but also advocates and the city, to come up with solutions for people to get off the streets. So that it gained momentum in September when the city was threatening to evict a group of campers from under the freeway downtown, and those campers came together to talk about their options, and what they asked for was a homeless bill of rights, because they said they were experiencing on a day-to-day basis discrimination because of their homeless status by law enforcement, by business owners, by all kinds of people. And that was a huge barrier to them getting on their feet and getting into housing.
Joel Kilgore is with the Loaves and Fishes community.
Lisa Johnson hosts a morning show on Duluth NPR affiliate KUMD. Coming up, first-hand accounts of homelessness. The homeless may be sitting in the next seat in the classroom. If you missed part of this show or want to share it, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1285. ~27,000 students in Washington state are facing homelessness. Kira McFarlane is one of them. She has gone from house to motel and back dozens of times. There were times her family didn't have enough to eat, didn't have enough money to wash their clothes, couldn't even afford toilet paper. Moving so many times made it hard for Kira to learn, and she almost dropped out until she got one last chance to make it. Chris Odie has this profile.
This is Kira as she gets up in the morning.
I'm tired and just want to go back to bed.
Just your average, nerdy high school gamer girl. She's 5'4", blonde, and usually pretty happy. Oh, and she also lives with me and my family, but you couldn't tell that, or what she's been through, just by looking at her. See, Kira has gone through some pretty tough things in her life, from moving to her parents divorcing. She lived with her father and brothers, where money was always a problem.
We were running low on food. You know, there was times where it was going to the food bank and coming up with whatever we could, you know, pawning things for a quick buck. And I mean, it was worse than that. It was having piles of unclean clothes for months that had never gotten the chance to be washed because we had no money to wash them. We had no washer or dryer available. So I was wearing, and my brothers, everyone, were wearing these clothes that, you know, we kind of just picked and we're like, well, does this smell okay? Is this good enough?
Sometimes things got so bad that they didn't even have toilet paper.
And that's the point where I just started feeling disgusting. I just started feeling this awful jealousy towards everyone who was clean.
This led to problems in school, especially math.
I've always had a problem with math because I was moving a lot in my life. And I wasn't able to learn all of my multiplications. Like, I can tell you truthfully, I probably only know it up to, like, fives. And that hurts.
And some people treated her like trash. Freshman year, one of her teachers said,
he said, I purposely sat you next to the smartest kid in all of my classes. The least he could have done was cheat off of his papers.
This obliterated Kira's confidence. She felt like there was no one she could go to for help. She failed her math classes, but still passed her freshman year. The next year, all of her classes started to take a drastic turn, downwards. She got too many Fs to graduate on time, so she transferred schools.
I found an alternative high school called Nova, and I was attending there for about 3 months when everything just crashed. I mean, it was falling apart, but this was the point where it finally just broke down.
What do you mean? Like your home life?
Yeah, we ended up having to leave because they were tearing down the building.
I see. So why was it being torn down?
It was going to be turned into a battered women's shelter for the Salvation Army.
She learned that her family was out of the building after a phone call from her father.
That phone call really broke me completely. I ended up having a breakdown in the middle of school. Because it happened again.
See, this kind of thing happened a lot in Kira's life. First time was when she was 5, and losing her house was almost an annual thing. Some places her family had been were better than others, but none were really great. Here's Kira's father to recount some of the places they've been.
Salvation Army hooked us up with some flexible landlords who were working with Section 8, I guess, at the time. And they moved us to South Park. And from South Park, we went to Judkins. And then from Judkins, we moved to Cherry.
Kira's family has also lived in Bothell, Everett, Bellevue, Greenwood, Lake City, and Georgetown. Kira's father lost his job at a metal mill when she was young, and says that he was not able to get another job for nearly a decade because of health conditions. The most severe ones are his heart condition and diabetes.
As the diabetes has progressed further, it's made things a little bit more difficult as far as employment goes.
Even after she had found a place to stay, she ended up leaving Nova after 2 more years of failing classes. She felt that it was the same situation at a different school. Housing was still unstable, and she missed a lot of classes. At this point, she had all but given up. She thought of dropping out and getting a GED, or even quitting altogether. And then I told her about Middle College High School, a last chance for her. She's been going there for 3 months now, and she feels more at home there than any other school because she's gotten support and is with other students who face similar challenges. And things are going better than before, in a surprising way.
I really enjoy my math class now. I'm pretty excited that I'm learning and I can learn and I'm understanding it.
I'll do this one next. So it's 5x minus 17 equals 123.
Not only does she understand it, but her math teacher, Marilyn Philly, had this to say.
There was a lot of, I hate this, at the beginning. And I think once she realized that math in this class is about a personal program where you do exactly what you need at your level on the computer, she got more comfortable. And not only can she learn math, but she could learn anything.
So we're going to add 17 to 17. And 120.
Kira has gained the confidence to solve problems she faces every day, and that will help her accomplish her goals of being a professional chef.
I think my biggest thing that I hope to accomplish is graduating from high school this year, and then moving on.
For Radioactive, this is Chris Odie. 40
divided by 5 equals 28. Okay.
And finally, one last very personal voice of living in poverty. We'll withhold her name, but her story is worth hearing. Until she was a teenager, this young woman lived in comfort. She had a home, and she had no reason to assume that would ever change. What she didn't see coming was the moment when her family lost everything.
You know that feeling when the lights are turned off? You can still walk around in your own home because you know where everything is. And you feel around with your hands for that light switch. And you know exactly where it is. And then your hand automatically reaches it and turns the light switch on. Because you're so used to your own home. That feeling of being able to walk around when the lights are turned off. Knowing where you're going. I lost all of that. I was the girl that never had to worry about anything until I wasn't that girl. For me, the definition of homeless meant somebody without a home. Homeless people out on the street were kind of different from the people that I saw in my daily life, and myself. But what I didn't understand was how easy it was for anybody to become homeless. Anybody could end up like that. It all happened during my sophomore year. And it just got worse and worse every day until we reached that summer right before my junior year started. It was that summer. My parents lost their job and we used all of our savings. Everything that we had, everything that I saved up for college, everything that we had for our future, everything that we just saved up was gone with a blink of an eye. I lost everything. I lost my home. When you walked in, you felt so big because the place was so small. There was a bed and a kitchen and just one shower room. That was it for the three of us, in one room. I wanted to stay out. I never wanted to come home because that place wasn't home for me. Every time I came inside, I smelled gas. The stove was broken, so the gas leaked from the stove, and because gas is heavier than the air that we breathe, it would float and sink to the bottom of the room. And when I slept, I would sleep on the floor because I would give up the bed for my parents to sleep in. That smell of gas would just fill up in my lungs and my nose, and I was sick of it. I didn't want to smell it anymore. But there was no escape for that. I spent day and night smelling that gas, hoping it would go away, trying to let myself fall asleep, but I couldn't. The smell was just so strong and inevitable. Just as I got used to sharing one room together, we moved out because we could not even afford the room. So then we went to a tiny hotel room. You could pull out the couch to be a bed, and there was a big bed for two people. But if we stretched out the couch, there would hardly be any space for us to walk around. School was an escape for me. That was the best part because I had nowhere to go. Every day at school, I was worried. I was worried about food I would be eating that night, where I would be sleeping that night, having to shower, if my parents would be able to find somewhere we could stay for that night, doing my homework. I was worried somebody would find out. And one day, it took my mom a long time to pick me up. She usually doesn't take that long, and I think I had been waiting about an hour, and I was really frustrated. I was waiting and waiting and calling and calling, and she said she would be there, just like all moms do. I waited and both my parents came to pick me up. And I thought, well, that's odd, and as I looked to sit in the back seat, I saw all of our suitcases in the back seat of our car. Every single one of them, all packed. My life was in a backseat of a car. You see, I had this pink unicorn pillow pet that I used to carry around with me all the time, and it was just sitting there, on top of our entire luggage, as if it was the cherry on top of my life. My life was in a backseat of a car in my high school parking lot. So I opened the door in the back and squeezed in as tightly as I could. There was a little moment of silence, and in my head, thoughts went through. I had a gush of anger, doubt, and fear. I was doubtful because I didn't know why all these suitcases were in the backseat of our car, and I was scared and anxious because I didn't know what was happening to me. So I asked my mom, "Why are all these suitcases in the backseat of our car?" And she answered, "Because we don't know where to go tonight and those are all of our things." And at that moment, my heart sank. All these worries started popping up in my head. Shower, homework, greasy hair, would I have light to do my homework, recharge my phone, do I have to tell my teachers, where am I going to eat or sleep? How are we going to sleep in the car, all three of us? And as we were driving out of that school parking lot, I realized that every student and every friend of mine today said, "I'm going home today." But I didn't have one. The home that I could actually call home was a place I was sitting in, which was the car. We found a place to stay with our maxed out credit card just for that one last night, and then we found somebody that would take us in. And then online, we sold our belongings, and little by little, our furniture was sold to provide for ourselves. And every time something was sold, I felt a part of me rip away because I grew up with those couches and beds. But with that, my parents got a job again. We moved to a one-room apartment where I still am. We're slowly getting back on our feet, and I'm just happy that I have a safe and warm home now. Now, whenever I see somebody suffering or going through pain, struggling financially, I feel so compassionate. I think that really gave me a compassionate heart because I know that pain inside that they have. I'm proud to say that I am who I am today because what I went through. I learned that you have to cherish every memory and be appreciative of every single person around you that care for you and love you. People that made me laugh or made my day just a little bit more enjoyable during that time, the memories that I made, those people are my pink unicorn pillow pet. They're the cherry on top of who I am as a person today. And I'm so thankful for that.
That essay comes to us courtesy of Open Orchard Productions. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also email me at sbarnett@wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.